Anyway, it's been interesting, if you care about these kind of things, over the last few weeks or so, to see what's been going on with this particular couple. And in particular, Meghan kind of making this journey of some way kind of becoming royalty, or this journey towards becoming royalty, becoming part of the royal family. One of the things I found sort of curious or interesting about that was, apparently, if you kind of are becoming royalty, you have to leave all social media. Did anyone see that the other day? She shut down all of her social media accounts as part of this kind of journey towards getting married and entering into the royal family. You're not allowed your own social media account, it would seem, or you have to choose not to. And of course, it creates some different reactions amongst people, doesn't it, these kind of things. For some of you, I'm sure, are just completely indifferent and could not care less about this whole thing. Some people, I'm sure, I know precisely, are very excited and are loving this whole idea and will probably be in Windsor, whatever the date is of the wedding that's going on and this kind of things. Perhaps for some, there's quite some strong sense of objection about some of the things that are going on. Maybe some of the comments that have been made about homeless people in Windsor as a result of this going on, or maybe feelings about the cost, you know, all this money that's going to be spent on this wedding and how much money that's going to be, taxpayers' money that's being spent on this event, and we haven't got any money and the NHS is in crisis. Why would we be spending all of the kind of money on these sorts of things? Someone becoming royalty, and it creates some different reactions in us. As we come and look at John chapter 12, we get this building picture of Palm Sunday, as we so often call it. This building picture of the psalms that are being sung, these quotes from psalms that people were singing, of the Jesus riding in on the donkey, of the palm branches that were being waved in the air. They're all this building picture pointing us towards Jesus as king, that these people were coming to proclaim Jesus as king. It says in verse 13, "Blessed is the King of Israel." We pick up that the news had spread about Lazarus, that Jesus has raised Lazarus from the dead. The news is getting around, and people have come. People have come to celebrate Jesus coming into Jerusalem. Here is the King who is the conqueror of death. And as we enter into chapter 12 of John, we get this kind of change in tone from what was before. It's kind of change from what we've had. Terry helped us understand a little bit last week that the first part of John, through to chapter 11 and the raising of Lazarus from the dead, John maps through for us sort of seven signs. Sometimes people count in slightly different ways, but seven signs, seven miracles that Jesus performs. And then chapter 12 marks a bit of a change in where it is that we're heading next. Odd enough, they begin in a similar way. He started off with these signs. The first one in the first chapters of John was the wedding at Cana and Jesus turning water into wine. And then we come here, we start chapter 12, and we're at another kind of social occasion. This time not a wedding, but a dinner that's been given in Jesus' honour. Martha's prepared this dinner in Jesus' honour. But suddenly this social event seems to take a bit of a turn. There seems to be a darker atmosphere, as though somehow the clouds are gathering. We pick up on what, we get this conflict between Judas and Mary. We pick up on Jesus' words in verse 7 that what Mary was doing was preparing Jesus for the day of his burial. I don't know if you've ever had a dinner party or had friends around or some kind of gathering that suddenly seemed to take that slightly sourer tone, that sudden change in atmosphere. Someone said something or there was that snappy reaction that you knew there was something more going on behind it. I imagine this was that kind of moment. You've got this kind of brewing argument almost between Judas and between Mary. And suddenly Jesus chimes in and says, "Leave her alone. She's doing this to prepare for my death." He's just raised someone from the dead, and now suddenly we see Jesus talking about his death. And then later, a few verses later on, we see this other change. Verse 23, Jesus says, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified." This is a change from what we've seen through the whole 11 chapters before. Again and again, Jesus has been saying, "The hour has not yet come. My hour has not yet come." John says, something happens, Jesus escapes from maybe some persecution, and John says, "Because his hour had not yet come." And then there's this change in chapter 12, where suddenly Jesus says, "The hour has come." This chapter marks a change in tone from what was before. And now all of what we see is pointing us towards the cross. Through the rest of the Gospel of John, it leads us up towards the cross, to Jesus' death and resurrection. And of course, Palm Sunday itself is the beginning of that last week of Jesus' life. Mary's actions spoke more than she knew, because a week later from what she did, Jesus would be buried in a tomb. And the gospel writers, and John in particular, as he writes this, sees that these events are so significant that he devotes nearly half of his gospel of Jesus to these events in the last week of Jesus' life. And that's why we're going to be spending the next 12 weeks or so leading up to Easter Sunday, looking through these events, what goes on in these chapters of John. John saw them so significant, he writes nearly half his gospel about Jesus, about just this one week of his life. So that's what we're going to be focusing our attention to for the coming weeks as we build up to Easter. But we see these characters and this confrontation build in chapter 12, particularly this confrontation between Judas and Mary. And it invites us into the story, it really invites us into the story to begin to ask, who are we most like? What is our reaction like to Jesus? As we enter into that story, are we like Mary? Are we there at Jesus' feet? Are we people who are willing to offer a profound and passionate worship to Jesus? An expression of our worship and our love for him, offering all that we have? Or are we more like Judas? Of course, we'd be very quick to want to distance ourselves from Judas and knowing as him as the one who betrayed Jesus. But John records Judas as the one who spoke out. But I'm pretty sure he probably wasn't the only person in that room who was questioning what Mary was doing. And if you were there, if you were in that moment where someone has just poured out what was the average kind of worker's, what she poured out was worth the average kind of worker's year's salary, a year's wages, just poured out in one moment. Would you not have perhaps been thinking the same? Really? Is this a good idea? Is this right? What is it you're doing? And of course, at the time, Judas would have come across as someone who was cautious, who was prudent, who was concerned for the poor. And then, of course, John reveals to us that Judas had darker motives too. That he was concerned about his own greed for himself, that he'd been stealing money that had been given. He'd been given this job to look after the money, probably a job that was given to him by Jesus himself. And he'd been misusing that trust, and he'd been stealing due to his own greed. And we see here, in that little statement, of course, the seeds of what would lead Judas on to betray Jesus. Let's not forget that in betraying Jesus, his first question he went and asked was, what will you give me? How much will you give me? He was paid off to betray Jesus to the Jewish leaders. We see the glimpses of his betrayal. And perhaps when we're honest, we see more glimpses of Judas in ourselves. Or is our reaction more like the crowds? The crowds who'd come to see Jesus. The crowds were pressing to see Jesus, and we're told it's also because of Lazarus. They wanted to see Jesus, and they wanted to see Lazarus, this person who'd been raised from the dead. They were coming to see this event. And they were keen to go around telling others about this exciting news. We see good things seeming to go on in the crowd, but just a little bit under the surface, things are not so great. Just later on in the chapter, verse 37, we're told even after Jesus had performed so many signs in their presence, they still would not believe in him. Still many did not believe. And of course, just later on in this last week of Jesus' life, the crowd will go from praising him as king to crying, crucify him. Are our reactions just something that go along with the crowd? They just do what looks right. They will just go with the latest trend. And then, of course, there's this almost kind of, in this dark scene, this kind of dark, almost comic humor that we pick up from what goes on with the Pharisees. Terry alluded to this last week in chapter 12, verse 10. So the chief priests made plans to kill Lazarus as well, for on account of him, many of the Jews were going over to Jesus and believing in him. Jesus has raised Lazarus from the dead, and people are starting to believe in Jesus. So their answer to this is to try and kill Lazarus as well. I know you have to have a certain kind of sense of humor to find that funny, but I think that's a little bit ridiculous. And then in verse 19, this kind of exasperated statement we get from them. So the Pharisees said to one another, "See, this is getting us nowhere." In actual fact, it almost there they said, "See, we're useless. We are having no effect. Look how the whole world has gone after him." And I don't think it's coincidence that John then begins the next sentence with, "Now there were some Greeks among those who went up to worship who wanted to come and find out more about Jesus." The whole world seemed to be going after him. The Pharisees found themselves exasperated and just wanting to avoid and get rid of Jesus at seemingly any cost. What's our reaction like? As people come and declare Jesus as king, how have we reacted? Or perhaps the more significant question is, who should we be like? Jesus says some very powerful words in verse 24. "For truly I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds." He begins to talk about his death, that it's necessary to go on. And he carries on to say the same for his followers. Anyone who loves their life will lose it, while anyone who hates their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. "Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me." Jesus begins to talk about his death, that he was going to die in order for people to follow him. But he talks not just about his death, but actually it was going to be the same for his disciples. Not that those who follow him were going to do exactly the same as Jesus had done and stand alone against the powers of sin and death. But the way that he was going was to pioneer a way that those who would follow him must go. He uses very strong words that often perhaps we just shy away from. "Whoever hates their life in this world will keep it for eternal life." It's a strong word that he uses. It is a word as strong as hate. He's talking about us not living for the king of this world, about not living for earthly applause, about not living to try and do well in this life, but to make Jesus king. Terry spoke last week about the purpose of what John was writing about is that we might have life to the full, that we might find life to the full. And here, as they proclaim Jesus as king, he follows it by saying, "You need to lose your life for my sake." Paul writes similar words in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. He says this, "For we who are alive," chapter 4, verse 11, "for we who are alive are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that his life may also be revealed in our mortal body. So then death is at work in us, but life is at work in you." I find so often when we talk about having life to the full with young people, and that Jesus said, "I came to give you life to the full," there's this kind of perspective of what life to the full kind of means. It means perhaps something very permissive, that I can do everything, that I can do anything, that I will just enjoy everything that's out there. That's what life to the full means. It means kind of a busyness and a permissiveness and just fun. Yet it seems that when Jesus talked about life to the full, it wasn't just about a go and fill your life with whatever you please, but actually the fullness of life is available as you die to your own desires and the desires of this world to make him king and follow him. And in John chapter 12, I think we see Mary as an example of just what Jesus is talking about in verses 25 and 26, of what it means to hate your life and to follow Jesus. We see Mary as an example of perhaps who we should be like. Mary comes to Jesus in a humble way. We know that it was a lowly job. It is a rubbish job to be the one who would come and wash people's feet. This was not a good place to be. This is what a servant would come and do for others. Yet she humbly comes and is willing to wash Jesus' feet. She's humbly willing to come and recognize how great he is. That Jesus is the one who was worthy of her getting down on her knees and washing his feet, doing the job of some of the lowest servants for Jesus. Actually, it begins for us by coming humbly and recognizing who Jesus is, to put ourselves in the right place. And there's no place for arrogance when it comes to coming before Jesus. Laying down our lives begins by recognizing who he is. She came humbly. But she was also perceptive. I'm pretty sure that Mary didn't understand the significance of her actions, of what she was doing, of what Jesus goes on to say, that she was doing this to prepare him for his burial, or even that she'd had any idea what was going to go on over the next week. But all I am pretty confident about is that she didn't decide to pour out something that was worth a year's wages on a whim. I'm pretty sure this wasn't just a, you know what I'm going to do this evening? I've got this idea. I might just spend a year's salary. Maybe some of you do that in your spare time, but personally, I think for most of us, it's just not the way that you live, right? So for her to do that, she must have had a clear sense that this was right for her to do. And perhaps that comes from the fact that we read about Mary before. You can read about it in Luke chapter 10. That Mary was the one who sat at Jesus' feet. If you've read through the New Testament, maybe you've got a memory of that, of Mary sat at Jesus' feet and Martha being the one who was up and preparing food, and this little kind of confrontation between Mary and Martha, that Martha was miffed that Mary wasn't helping her. We see Mary, the one who was sat at Jesus' feet. And perhaps she was more perceptive. Perhaps she knew that this was right to do, to make this extravagant gesture, because she'd been sat at Jesus' feet and listening to him. John wants to show us that God's plan for us is to deepen our faith. That his plan for us is that we will grow and deepen in our walk with him. We see Mary as someone who's listened and grown in relationship with God. We gave everybody a book at Christmas, a spiritual health check, and I hope that you've had a chance to maybe look at that or be using that over the last couple of weeks. If you haven't had a copy, there's probably one in the foyer for you with your name on, or you can see me and Elsie, and we can provide you with one. And it's aimed to be something to help you think about where you are spiritually and to find ways of growing with God. And one of the things it talks about through one of the studies is getting your vitamins. And it talks about using the Bible and reading the Bible and saying there's different ways that we can read the Bible. We can read it as something that's kind of historical or interesting, or to learn some facts or to learn some moral things. But the challenge was is that we should be reading the Bible in order to grow in relationship with Jesus, in order to know him more. That as we know him more, we might be perceptive to what his will is, to what he would have us do, to how he would have us live, that we might be ones who are ready to listen to the call of the king. It says something very interesting, I think, in what Jesus said in verse 26. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. So often we think about it in the sense of where I am, God will be. God is with me by his Holy Spirit. So where I am, God will be. And God's always with me. And we so often have that kind of perspective, and that's what we talk about. But Jesus here seems to turn it around in a slightly different way. Where I am, my servant will be. that his challenge to us there seems to be in following him. It's not just saying, well, God's with me wherever I go, so it's okay. But the challenge seems to be to listen to what his call is and to be where it is that he is working. To be perceptive to what it is he's asking of us and to go to where he is at work. Not to say, well, God bless me in what I'm doing. But to say, well, Jesus, where are you working? And how can I join in? Where I am, there my people will be. And of course, that's a challenge to us because it actually requires us to stop and to listen to what it is he's asking of us. To not just plow on with our best ideas or what we've been doing for 10 years. But to stop and to listen to how it is he might be calling us. To where it is he's at work. To the people that he wants to meet. And the places he's asking us to go. And sometimes that's so much harder than just asking God to bless what I'm already doing. Jesus calls us to listen, to be perceptive. Mary paid attention to what God was saying. But she wasn't just humble and perceptive, she was courageous too. She was sharply criticized for what she was doing. And I can't imagine that it would be an easy moment, that point where you pour out perfume worth a year's worth of salary. I almost made this that Mary was fearless in what she did. But I can't imagine that she was fearless. I can't imagine anybody would take that action and not be afraid. I think actually what she was courageous in overcoming her fear. She was sharply criticized. What she was doing was extravagant and over the top. And people didn't approve of it. We've already talked about Judas and his kind of disapproval that you would use something worth so much money in this way. Let's not forget as well, we've got Mary and Martha. Martha, again, who's the one who's preparing this meal. And Mary, the one who, again, isn't helping, but is just spending all the money, it would seem. And again, there's that sense of disapproval. And in letting down her hair and in washing Jesus' feet with her hair, that was not the kind of thing that you would do in polite company. This is not the kind of way that a woman would be expected to behave in polite company. One of the commentators wrote that it would perhaps be equivalent today to a lady hitching up her long skirt to the top of her thighs. It's not typically what you do at a dinner party. It was socially unacceptable. And think for a moment about that, the onlookers' reactions, the looks, the comments, the way people would view her. They did not approve. But to Mary, it doesn't seem to matter. Because Jesus approved. Whose approval do we seek? Whose approval do we look for? Do we live for the approval of others? For their likes, for their respect, for their friendship, for the praise? Or are we above all concerned about Jesus' approval of us? I don't believe Mary was fearless. But she overcame that fear of rejection, that fear of what others would think, because she was seeking the approval of just one person. And she was being willing to be courageous, to humbly come before Jesus, to listen to what he asked, and to do what pleased him, Jesus the King. And as a result of all this, she did something that was hugely fruitful. She did more than she knew. She points us towards Jesus' death. And as a result of what she did, it wasn't about her. Actually, she points us to Jesus. She points us towards his death. This begins this journey of chapter 12 through the rest of John, of leading us towards Jesus' death and resurrection. As a result of what she did, through this extravagant, courageous gesture, it didn't point to her. He glorified Jesus. If we want to be a people who live in a listening to God, courageously following him, doing sometimes those extravagant things or those things that maybe are socially unacceptable, Let's make sure that the touchstone that we have of whether it's the right thing to do is, does it bring glory to Jesus? Does it point to me or does it point to him? She was fruitful in what she did because it was about Jesus and not about her. Terry helped us think last week about what the purpose of John's writing is. That his purpose is that we might believe in Jesus, and that by believing in him, we might find life to the full. Mary comes humbly, perceptive to what God would have her do, with great courage. And she fruitfully glorifies Jesus in what she does. Here, this points us towards what the fullness of life is. What it means to lay down our own life. To not be concerned about the things of the world. To hate the applause and the approval of the world. But be seeking the approval of the King. One of the great things about being able to think about Palm Sunday well ahead of what is actually Palm Sunday is that when we get to Palm Sunday, we're usually just thinking about praising Jesus, the arrival of this King. Yet here we've got a chance to look more at what Jesus says. And straight after these crowds have come and declared Jesus as King and praised him and welcomed him in as King, he says to them and he says to us, anyone who loves their life will lose it, while anyone who hates their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me. The response that Jesus calls from us, yes, is our praise to welcome Jesus as King, but also to be willing to be those who will lay down our lives for him. That in our praise, we'd lay down our lives and follow him and go where Jesus is, to be where he will lead us to as we follow Jesus the King.